Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Wednesday edition of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. Thanks so much for tuning in, whether it is over 97.9 The Hill or streaming us on chapelboro.com. We've got a whole bunch of local news to catch you up on with today. We begin in the business side of things as an award-winning Chapel Hill restaurant announced today it is closing its doors for good. Leadership for Crook's Corner on West Franklin Street announced in an email to customers today it is permanently closed as of today. The Southern Cuisine restaurant first opened in 1982, making it one of the most long-standing restaurants in our community. Team members for Crook's Corner shared the news in an email to regular customers, thanking them for their decades of support. That message read, quote, "It has been an incredible honor to serve both our community in our place and as Chapel Hill's culinary ambassador to the wider world. With an incredibly heavy heart, we must share the news that we are closing. The position we find ourselves in, exacerbated by the COVID-19 crisis, is no longer tenable." We have seen a big reaction on social media to this news, and we put together some of the top community members and people sharing their stories, sharing their emotions around this news about Crook's Corner closing today. You can find that post in our news section, and be sure to check out our main story on Crook's closing as well, because we've got some interesting details on the history of that building, which was many things before it became the Crook's Corner that we know today. Turning to some news out of our state government, Republican in the North Carolina legislature have finally agreed on how much they want to spend on the state government next year. It helps loosen a fiscal knot that has been delaying House and Senate budget work for the past few weeks. House Speaker Tim Moore and Senate Leader Phil Berger shared a release on Tuesday with this news that their chambers have set their spending cap for the year starting on July 1st at $25.7 billion. That is an improvement over where the pair stood just a few days ago, according to reports, as they were millions of dollars apart from each other. Now, this is far from the budget process being finished and over at the state level. This strategy of settling on a dollar amount is designed to ease negotiations between the two chambers as they now try and figure out competing plans on how to spend that amount of money. The chambers now must pass their own versions of a budget for the upcoming fiscal year, and North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper will then work with Moore and Berger to negotiate on those details. The General Assembly is going to aim to truly enact its first budget since 2019 this year, when Cooper, and the reason why we haven't had that since then is because Cooper vetoed the Republican leader's proposal at that time. They were unable to override his veto, and then the COVID-19 pandemic made it so nobody was working on a normal budget. Speaking of budget news locally, the Chapel Hill Town Council is set to hold a meeting tonight and consider its final budget for the upcoming fiscal year. That meeting is also going to include a review of some of the latest plans for University Place as well. It is set to begin around 6:30 tonight and can be streamed on the Town of Chapel Hill's website. Also in local government news today, we learned via the News of Orange County newspaper that Mayor Jen Weaver in Hillsborough has announced that she plans to file for re-election when the filing period opens at the beginning of July. She said that the desire to run again partially has something to do with the community getting onto the other side of the COVID-19 pandemic. And she said, quote, "We have the opportunity to focus more on some of the regular mayor stuff as a town and as a community." Weaver ran for mayor unopposed in 2019 to replace longtime Hillsborough Mayor Tom Stevens. She served on the town of Hillsborough Board of Commissioners for 6 years prior to her being Hillsborough's mayor. We will see if anybody files to run against her this time around once the filing period opens on July 2nd. Back in Chapel Hill, community members gathered in the Dean Smith Center yesterday for the 33rd annual Carolina Blood Drive. Organizers reported collecting nearly 550 units of blood throughout the day as the longstanding event continued its work to build up blood donations for people in need. 97.9 The Hill's Elle Karras gives us the inside scoop of how the event went.
The Carolina Blood Drive has been helping save lives for more than three decades, thanks to endless volunteers, Red Cross and campus staff, and longtime Tar Heels like Ben Acock. Ben has lived in Chapel Hill ever since he came to UNC as a freshman in 1972. He's also been donating blood since the very first Carolina Blood Drive back in 1989. This year was no exception.
It was absolutely great. I came in before the lines hit. I was whisked in. I had a very quick encounter with the guy that had to take all the vital signs you need to take before you can give blood. And I may have set a personal best bleed rate at only 8 minutes.
Every year, he comes with his wife Heidi to donate, rain or shine, during a pandemic as well as in more normal times.
I am not the activist type, but this is one of the ways that I feel like I can contribute to something more than just what I'm doing.
Last year, the Carolina Blood Drive earned the distinction of being the country's largest single-day blood drive during the COVID-19 pandemic, collecting 808 units of blood at the event. This year, Carolina aimed to beat that record, shooting for 1,000 units of blood in order to ensure a stable blood supply during the pandemic.
So this morning, we had a lot of donors who were lined up outside the door right before 7 a.m., and they were excited, they were ready to come in. Everybody had a great attitude, which is just fantastic to see it first thing in the morning.
That was Jen Daniil, chair of the Blood Drive's planning committee, as well as an associate professor at UNC. She said, thanks to the campus community, the Carolina Blood Drive has collected more than 35,000 units of blood and potentially impacted more than 100,000 patients since its start 33 years ago. All those units have gone to those who require life-saving blood transfusions, including trauma victims and those who need surgery or cancer treatments.
But I just love the idea of being able to donate and give and save lives and impact people who really you're probably never going to meet, but for whom, like, you know, an 8-minute donation for me could be literally a life-saving thing for someone else. And I just think that is so powerful and really important.
Not wanting to sit out on the cause, while covering the event, even I decided to register for the blood drive as a walk-in.
So next we're going to come down to the floor, and we're going to get you officially checked in the Red Cross system. So they're going to check you in at one of these laptops.
From there, it was simple. A quick health history, a short walk across the stadium to a reclining chair, a friendly nurse to strap on an arm cuff, a little tape, all to finally give a different kind of gift than I was used to.
If you'll just squeeze gently and hold for me, please. It'll be just a little stick and a sting.
We are successfully stuck. The blood is flowing here at the Carolina Blood Drive.
But me, I'm just a novice, a first-time giver. For blood donor veterans like Ben, he has some sage advice for those looking to donate in the future.
It's really an easy thing to do, and the only thing I'll say is don't do is when they stick the needle in to try and get started, just don't look. You sit around for a few minutes and then they feed you and then they march you out with a t-shirt. Hard to go wrong.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
Taking a look at some sports news, a couple of things to note when it comes to Carolina athletics, specifically on the women's lacrosse side. UNC senior goalie Taylor Moreno was selected this week as one of four finalists for the Honda Sport Award in women's lacrosse. This comes after Moreno led the Tar Heel defense, which led the country in fewest goals allowed per game. Individually, Moreno finished second in the country with a goals against average of 6.65 and was also named the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. She was one of four finalists as well for this year's Towariton Trophy, which is the lacrosse version of the Heisman Trophy in football. That was recently given to Boston College star Charlotte North. Still, finalists for the Honda Sport Award are chosen by a panel of coaches and experts representing the Intercollegiate Women's Lacrosse Coaches Association, and the award is given to the top woman athlete across 12 different NCAA sports, with the winners becoming finalists for the Honda Cup, honoring the Collegiate Woman Athlete of the Year. We'll see if Moreno is able to win that award. One Tar Heel already has, that is UNC star field hockey player Aaron Mattson, who won the Honda Sport Award for her sport there. Meanwhile, Moreno also earned an All-American selection on Tuesday from the Intercollegiate Women's Lacrosse Coaches Association. That group revealed its annual All-American teams with a total of five Tar Heels among the first team selections. In addition to Moreno, UNC attackers Jamie Ortega and Katie Hogue, midfielder Allie Mastriani, and defender Emma Trenchard also earned the honor. Carolina, that means it got a player picked at each of the positions, which is pretty neat. The Tar Heels 5 first-team choices led all schools nationwide for the honor. It is worth noting that all 5 of those players were also recently named first-team All-Americans by both USA Lacrosse and Inside Lacrosse magazines. Well, I mentioned it looked like it could be a rainy night in our community, but at the moment, we do still have minor league baseball set to happen over in Durham as the Bulls are at home against the Charlotte Knights. First pitch in that game is set for 6:35, and the Bulls looking to win a second one against the Knights as they won the series opener yesterday, 8-5. Some more local news to catch you up on here from the town of Chapel Hill, as the local government is proposing to add bike lanes to Culbreth Road this summer. If approved, the center turn lane along most of that road would be removed, and 5 feet bike lanes would be added on both sides of the road. 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has more on why this would work.
The Culbreth Road Lane reallocation is part of a repaving project by the North Carolina Department of Transportation, which the town sees as a chance to better the pedestrian and cyclist experience.
As part of NCDOT's repaving, the town sees an opportunity to re-examine the lanes and look at the potential for bike lanes, which we've identified as something that we'd like to do in our town's mobility and connectivity plan.
That's Josh Mayo, the transportation planner for the town of Chapel Hill. The Chapel Hill Mobility and Connectivity Plan aims to achieve a 35% bicycling, walking, and transit commute to work in Chapel Hill by the year 2025. Mayo said to reach this goal, the town identified a network of changes to provide the best cycling and pedestrian experience possible.
So over time, we hope to implement those through projects like this, through new development, and through federally funded grants, and create a connected, protected, and useful network for people from ages 8 to 80.
Unlike other mobility projects in the town, Mayo said the Culbreth Road project arose without the need for federal funding.
This Culbreth Road project is a great opportunity to get a low-cost bicycle facility in, because NCDOT is already going to repave the road, and it doesn't take much additional cost or much additional effort to provide NCDOT with a design that includes bike lanes, and it would be, you know, the same repaving costs at NCDOT's cost as well.
For those concerned about the impact on traffic, the project does not anticipate major changes. Mayo said the town modeled the proposed changes in a town-wide traffic model and found little to no delay as a result of the change. Project managers are holding 2 public information sessions for community members to voice their opinions on the project June 10th and June 14th. You can also provide feedback in a survey on the town's website. The project could start as early as July 1st, and if approved, would be scheduled to be completed prior to the start of the school year in August. The Culbreth Road Lane reallocation is not the only project happening within the Mobility and Connectivity Plan. The town is also working on the Estes Drive bike and pedestrian improvements and the Fordham Side Path, both of which aim to begin construction later this year. For more information on the projects or how to voice your opinion, visit chapelboro.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I am Ava Pukach.
The Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools District is celebrating this week as it is the final one for classes in this academic year. The system is certainly wrapping up a strange school year with elements of remote learning, in-person learning, and kind of everything in between. Many people are already looking ahead to a fall in hopes that it could be a little bit more normal in terms of instruction across the board. That includes the newly appointed CHCCS Chief Equity and Engagement Officer, Rodney Trice. I spoke with him for Speaking of Schools this week to get his thoughts on inequity in the district and his approach to addressing some of the top issues. And here is what he had to say.
For those who have kind of run in equity circles, we like to say that, what the pandemic laid bare, we were talking about before the pandemic. I just think a light was kind of placed on some of the inequities, whether we're talking about access to technology, access to enrichment materials or activities, those types of things, were some of the items that, were really elevated during the pandemic. Access to healthy foods, as you know, many school districts across the country stepped up in a major way to make sure that their students and families had access to the bare necessities. And now that we're emerging from the pandemic, and hopefully marching toward in-person learning, it's going to be important that we address the social and emotional and academic needs of our students.
You kind of went ahead and bled into the next question I had, which is, of course, you begin with CHCCS again in this new role on July 7th, but I'm sure you've been thinking ahead quite a good bit. What are some strategies that you would like to implement at this in the CHCCS district based on the experience you've now gained working with Wake County Public Schools?
Right. So, you know, I like to say inequities anywhere are just like inequities everywhere. So, you know, the inequities that we deal with in Wake are the same ones that we, you know, we'll deal with in Chapel Hill and the same ones that are in Detroit and other districts across the country. And so in many ways, the strategies are the same. You know, I've had the opportunity since being announced as the new Chief Equity and Engagement Officer to participate in a number of community events even before my official start. But one of the areas that, you know, I'd like to really focus on is continuing to meet with families and students who live the achievement gap every single day. Often school districts don't do enough in terms of, you know, picking their brain for ideas around solutions to addressing inequities. And they have very excellent ideas about what needs to happen in schools. And what we're finding is that the feedback and advice and guidance that we're getting from students and families that are traditionally historically marginalized will work for all students if we really implement them in a way that are fair and equitable.
Once again, that was CHCCS Chief Equity and Engagement Officer Rodney Trice. If you want to hear more of that conversation, be sure to head to chapelboro.com. We've got it in our audio archives for News on the Hill, which you can find by just scrolling on down our homepage. Be sure to look for Speaking of Schools, an excellent segment, and you can find many of the other editions of that as well as we check in with the leaders of our local school districts.